This episode of The Edge is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, I'm Rekha Sharma, and I played Landry on Star Trek Discovery. You are listening to The Edge on Trek FM.
What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Welcome, listeners, to Postcards from the Edge. I'm your host, Amy Nelson, and with me this week is Dan Gunther from Literary Treks. Dan, welcome to Postcards.
Hey, Amy, happy to be here. Always excited to podcast with you. So happy that I was able to come on for this episode.
Yeah, and you were last week on live, and I was able to sit on the chat with you.
Yeah, they're always so much fun. I love doing those live shows.
Yeah, you're getting your Discovery on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If anybody who's watched my videos or listened to me on the podcasts that I'm on, they know that I love Discovery. So, unapologetically so.
Excellent. Well, today we are going to discuss the fan response to Season 2, Episode 13, Such Sweet Sorrow. Now, if you would like to participate and share your response, please post your comments on the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field, and it will come right up. Now, at the time of this recording, we have 337 comments posted, and that's the exact same number as last week. So we have a 0% change. Isn't that great?
That's impressive. That's really impressive.
Yes, it is. I was so excited to see that. And I was like, okay, I'm just stopping the comments. Well, I didn't stop the comments, but that's the number that I'm going with for this week. Very excited. We've had some awesome numbers, and there's one more week, and I get to then do all my math with it. I'm so excited.
That's the best part, right? I mean, you know, I have so many ridiculous little spreadsheets that I'm keeping track of all kinds of stuff in my life for. I think nerds like us, we just like data, and that's really
Absolutely.
Cool.
Absolutely. See, and we are building up all this data, and then our life will be like the sphere data.
There you go. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It'll be our information that some future AI wants to steal to better itself.
Exactly. And better it will, because we are good people.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. There's no question.
Well, Dan, why don't you tell me, what did you think about this episode? I'm sure everyone wants to know.
Well, I really, of course, enjoyed this episode. There were a lot of really great emotional moments, as Discovery has, you know, been so good at doing lately. You know, and we get to see, of course, the interiors of the Enterprise, which I'm sure a lot of the comments we're going to be talking about are talking about for sure. I had some issues. The story seemed a little bit kind of jumping all over the place at times, a little bit. But you know, I overall really enjoyed this episode. You know, seeing those bright uniforms on the Enterprise bridge and some of those character moments, and, you know, the end of the episode with, you know, that core group of people coming together. There's so much to like in this episode. It's mostly build up for the next episode, but it's good build up, and I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, now I usually save my replies for the main show. However, I'm going on vacation and won't be on the main show, so I do get to share my thoughts this week. I'm very excited.
Excellent.
Yeah, I was watching, and As most listeners know, I'm not the biggest TOS fan, more of a TNG girl, but I didn't really recognize the bridge. And it sort of made me sorry that I didn't, because everyone was like, the bridge is so great. I love the 1701. And so I feel like I missed out on a part of that. So I do begrudge myself for that. And I will have to go back and watch TOS yet again and get that bridge into my brain. It's just, you know, I'm too much of an Enterprise D person. And I had some questions, because like the first part, I'm like, well, where's Tyler? And then all of a sudden he showed up sort of, you know, 20 minutes in. I'm like, oh, there he is. I don't know. So it seemed, like you said, just all over the place, I think
it was. A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. And the sorrowful goodbyes, I was a little bored with them, but I'll tell you what, that time when Pike said his goodbyes on the bridge of Discovery and they all eyes to the captain, like, oh my gosh, I got misty eyed. That's when I got the feels. Like, Anson Mount was so amazing, and Captain Pike is just the best captain. Well, I won't say the best, one of the best captains. So it's going to be very difficult to not have Pike on next season. I'm already feeling the pains of losing him. And as far as the story goes, you're right. It's really building up. I'm hoping to see what's going to happen. Are they really going to be able to make this time jump? What's going to happen to the sphere data? I'm just really looking forward to next week to see all of these questions answered. But I love the character buildup and how they are truly becoming a family, even with all of their differences. So,
good episode. Definitely.
Yeah.
So one thing with regards to the bridge that I had read after watching the episode was James Colley, who did, you know, the Star Trek New Voyages and Phase 2, and now does the bridge, the original series set tours kind of thing. They apparently sent some buttons or molds for buttons for the CBS guys to incorporate in the set. From their recreation of the bridge to the reimagining of the bridge on Discovery for them to use. So that's really cool.
That is. And listeners, on our postcards thread, Justin Ozer just went crazy, but we love him for it, and posted all these screenshots of the bridge and how beautiful and, you know, colorful. I do remember the lights on the bridge, and they had that there, and I really did like the turbo lift, you know, where you grab
the little handle thing. Yeah.
I recognize that. I was like, oh, look at that. So, listeners, if you haven't had a chance, please go through. There's lots of good pictures. Karen Chupless posts a lot of pictures, and Justin did. So it's really good to, you know, get a chance to look at the bridge and look at those scenes, you know, because they're just on screen for such a short amount of time. So, all right. Well, let's get to the fan response. So, Dan, why don't you start us off?
So we start out, Brian Malosh comments, I just finished my first watch of it. First impressions, it was good. Good is in Best of Both Worlds Part 1, good. Amy, yes, that good. 17 out of 10 good. Update. Okay, after second and third watches, not that good. I agree that's too high praise. Still great, though. One of the best of the show to date. And Simon DeLuca, in that same comment thread, says, I haven't felt this way about Star Trek since the ending of Best of Both Worlds Part 2. I am so happy and moved. So I've heard this a few places, people comparing this to the Best of Both Worlds. And thankfully, we don't have to wait a whole, you know, however many months it was between those episodes to find out what happens. But it kind of feels like that. Like, if I had a time crystal, I would probably use it to go to next week to watch Part 2, which is, you know, a ridiculous use of a time crystal, but there it is.
Oh my gosh, Dan, you're so funny. Well, Brian, Simon, I'm just going to have to say no on that. It is not as good as Best of Both Worlds, part one or part two. That's my personal opinion. It's my show, and you're wrong. No, I'm just kidding.
For the record, I agree. Quality-wise, it's not up there with those episodes. The same kind of feeling right now, just because it's so fresh. But yeah, not as good as those episodes,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. But it definitely, it obviously was good enough for people to remember Best of Both Worlds. So I'll give you credit for that. Dennis Bellinger says, I am not someone who cries easily or often, but this episode got me bawling as well as laughing in my chair, and it keeps giving. Simon continues to say, I never cry. Tears were falling tonight. Paul Wright Jr., it got me too, like the fourth time this season. Alexander Olivares Sanchez, that's just dust in my eyes. Justin Ozer, I cried too. I also predict Brandy will be 13 for 13. And Dennis says, if she did not, we might suspect she's been taken over by control. Well, that was just a sampling of the many people who got so emotional and teared up and were crying in this episode. Very powerful, and, you know, kudos to the writers. Like I said, I got misty-eyed at the Pike scene. It gets to you when you know and love these characters.
Mm-hmm, definitely. A couple episodes this season have done that to me. This one didn't quite get there for me, but I absolutely see those moments that, you know, other people might respond that way. And I think you're absolutely correct about Brandy. Yes. I can guarantee this is 13 for 13 so far. Yeah. And knowing how season finales usually go, it's probably going to be 14 for 14. Well, Sci-Fi Fan Freak from Twitter says, tonight was epic. I think I'm going to have to wait till next week to see the finale to make any judgments. I mean, I can see when the writers are taking the show now for the third season, and it's clear now who's not joining them. Ooh. So a bit of holding off on opinion there until getting the second part. So yeah, that's kind of the thing when there's all this setup, right? It's hard to know exactly how it's going to pay off and what all the little moments in this episode might actually mean when all is said and done. So I definitely respect that opinion for sure.
Yes. Dan McWilliams writes, the production design of Enterprise on the show makes the design on Abrams' Trek look like a joke. Great throwback and update at the same time. Honestly, the production design of this whole show makes these big budget films from 2009 look pretty bad by comparison. The ship looked like a toy. The phasers, tricorders, communicators look like toys. The uniforms look like cosplay. The sets look like whatever they could find sitting around within driving distance. And this is all relative. I say this as someone who loved seeing these movies when they came out. And Scott A. Tarrant also writes, I love the design of the 1701 bridge. Logical updates, but with respect to the original, much better than the JJ-verse Apple Store bridge. So interesting. I didn't even think to compare it to the Abrams films. I loved the bridge on the Abrams films. Absolutely. So interesting to see the differences. I'm not sure. I guess Discovery is more true to form, but with me not being familiar with TOS, that's, I guess, why I liked the J.J. Abrams interpretation.
Yeah, I on the whole, I agree with these comments, but maybe not with so much, you know, dislike of the new Trek, the J.J. Abrams Kelvin timeline stuff, whatever we're calling it this week. I really do love the production design on Discovery and the props. And now that we've seen the Enterprise Bridge, it's just, yeah, it blows it out of the water for me. But I appreciate what they were doing with the J.J. Abrams films. But yeah, I don't like them as much as I like what we're seeing in Discovery.
Every week it seems like I'm reading a comment about the production value of this TV episode. And it's like, yeah, this is made for TV, such advancements that we've come, you know.
But each week feels like a film. It's amazing. Well, Chris Foster says, the scene between Michael and Amanda and Sarek had me in shambles. Few people get to say goodbye to their parents in that way, and just the concept of what she was doing had tears streaming down my face. It was almost too much. Scene after scene of emotional goodbyes, I was begging for levity or action. Something tells me my pleas will be answered next week. Yeah, this is definitely the big long breath before we jump into the huge action that I'm sure is coming next week. I have no more insight than any of you guys, but I saw that trailer. I think we're getting some pretty epic action next week. So, Amanda, Michael, and Sarek, that scene, that was very well done. I really appreciated some of the subtle choices by the actors, especially James Frain in that scene.
Yeah. And Chris, thank you for your comment and recognizing what a blessing it is to have a goodbye for your parents. Many of us do not have that goodbye if, you know, we're long distances and can't be there at the time of passing or anything, or, you know, so definitely that's getting to me. It's going to hit me on the rewatch. So thanks, Chris, for your comment. All right, Larry Selvidge Jr. says, so just to note, my theory of the Red Angel that was quickly dismissed here on the podcast 2 weeks ago was dead on. All right, sorry, Larry, we didn't mean to dismiss you. He continues and says, you got to trust Tilly. And she said it was Michael in the suit. Great episode. We'll rewatch this weekend. Yes, I was very doubtful because they said 100% that it's Michael. And then we had the mother. And so I was all up in arms. So, Larry, you were correct. I was wrong. Well done.
It takes a big person to admit when they're wrong. Dave Steele says, this episode and season will go down as among the greatest Star Trek of all time. Anson Mount has turned in an incredible performance that will be watched and discussed decades from now. The character of Burnham will take its place among the most compelling characters in the franchise. Yeah, I guess you can say I liked it. Very strong opinions from Dave here, and I agree. I don't think it is necessarily the greatest Star Trek, but it's definitely carving out its space, and I think it's really making a name for itself. Like you said, Anson Mount's performance, I think this is the definitive Captain Pike. We've seen him take this character in places that I never would have expected from just the little bits we got from Geoffrey Hunter early in Star Trek's history. Seeing it fleshed out now, I think, is incredible. And Burnham, I agree, is a wonderful character and a great lead for this show. So, you know, can't wait to see what all their destinies are in the next episode. We know where Pike ends up, but we don't know where Burnham's going to end up. So looking forward to finding that out.
Yeah. And Dave, your comment made me think, because I would love to talk about Anson Mount decades from now. I will still be talking about him. But Dan, I'm wondering now, as you read, you know, Star Trek books, because you do that a lot on Literary Treks. Shot. That's a live show thing. But now when you read it, are you going to imagine Anson Mount's Pike? Or are you still Geoffrey Hunter? Like, what's going to happen when you are reading about Captain Pike? Who's going to be in your head?
That's a tough one, because on Literary Treks, we did read one Captain Pike novel towards the beginning of this past season, and I was picturing Geoffrey Hunter while reading that. However, we're going to be doing another one in the next couple of weeks, and that'll be after the entire second season has aired, and I've seen a lot more of Anson Mount's Pike now. So yeah, I'm actually curious myself, because, you know, my brain does funny things when I'm reading, like things pop into my head and images, you know, and I can't really, I sometimes set out trying to picture a certain thing, but then my brain's like, nope, it's going to be this now. So right. I'm actually not sure. I don't know.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And I'm wondering if we're going to have more Pike novels because of Discovery.
Well, I am looking forward. There is a Pike Discovery novel, The Enterprise War, coming out in a few months. So okay. I'm really looking forward to that. And I'm sure I'll be picturing Anson Mount for that
one. Oh, awesome. All right, Mark Keller writes, well, that was quite an episode. It's a neat idea to have the crew volunteer to accompany Michael into the future. The question is, how can Spock join them given his illustrious career? This means that either Spock doesn't go or the crew eventually travels back. Maybe Discovery will be like Voyager for a few seasons. Kurtzman said the finale will be a game changer. It will be interesting to find out what happens next week. So yeah, Mark, great question, because we know that Spock ends up on the Enterprise with, you know, with Kirk. So we can't mess with that too much. So interesting questions, Mark.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, are we able to bring in stuff that we saw fleetingly in the trailer for next week's episode, or is that
going to
be considered spoilers by some people? Okay. My personal theory, I think, you know, like you said, Kurtzman said that the finale is going to be a game changer. I think that they do go to the future. I think they will be stuck there. This crew and Discovery will carry on forward. I think that group of people that we saw going with Michael is going to be the cast for season two. However, in the trailer, there are a few shots of Spock in a shuttlecraft. So I think something's going to happen and he's going to be separated from them. He won't be able to go through the wormhole to the future, but everyone else will. That's my guess.
All right. You heard it here first.
Brian Yates says, when they choose to, Trek does farewell scenes very well. Really enjoyed the crew recording farewell letters to their families. Aside from adding to the emotions, it gave us a bit more insight into their personal lives. I wonder if Tyler will somehow sacrifice himself for the greater good. Oh, and I also enjoyed seeing Georgiou being put in her place a few times. I don't dislike her character, but she needs to be reminded about whose sandbox she's playing in. Excellent comment. There's so many things here. I absolutely love those farewell letters. I was like, ooh, I wonder, you know, who's Stamets writing to, a brother or a sister, you know, who's the sibling, like all these little tidbits, learning more about these characters. And, Tyler, I'm glad you brought that up, because there's that scene with Pike in the turbo lift, right? Where he says, do you trust me? He says, yeah, I think I do, or something like that. And Tyler says, I got to go do something. So what's that about? What's he going to do? You know, oh, hate all these dangling threads. I just want to know. And yes, Georgiou, the scene with Mihani Ikahalikapo.
Ooh.
I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing that I know that name so perfectly. I don't know whether to be proud or not of that.
Be proud.
Okay. With this group of people, I can be proud. With other groups, maybe not so much. But yeah, when she says to her that, you know, being queen means that I don't have to listen to Snark, and I actually made a law about it, and shoves the bowl of ice cream at Georgiou, that was so great.
So I laughed
so hard at that scene. It was excellent.
Yeah, it was nice seeing some humor that wasn't like based on what Tilly was saying. Like this time it was Poe, or, you know, with Georgiou, like it was great. It was good.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Well, Bill Sweet writes, I loved this episode. I kind of saw this coming, but it was so great to see. As an old TOS fan, I was all goosebumps to see the 1701 in all her glory. It's clear that that Disco will go off to the future, and I'm actually a little torn. I'm in full support of the story going forward, but I hope they don't stay in the future, especially if it's some convoluted fixing the timeline business to make the show fit where it already fit just fine, despite the complaints of some fans who will never be satisfied by any such fix. To be utterly honest, my interest will diminish a bit if we leave the TOS era permanently. Keeping it in the far future won't feel like Trek to me. Well, Bill, interesting. Thank you for sharing your thoughts. And I'm glad to know that you like this little time period where Discovery is. Because, man, I'll tell you, at the beginning, when Discovery is coming on, everyone was up in arms about it.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on some of your comments there, Bill. I don't think there's any need for fixing. I think, Discovery fit just fine. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, there's visual updates, but, you know, the producers of the show were very upfront about that when the show started, saying it would be a visual update of that era. So, you know, I don't get upset about that stuff. I know a lot of other people do. As far as where it goes in the future, I'm excited if they go to the far future, but I will be just as happy if they stay back in this time period as well. So, yeah, I'm kind of torn about that as well a little bit.
I mean, are getting, you know, still the future with the Picard series. So I sort of feel like I can breathe and, yeah, we can stay back in, you know, TOS era, because I'm fine, because I know we're going to get that Picard, you know, after Nemesis, which I have been wanting. So I'm fine if it stays there, too. I like learning more about TOS era things.
Yeah, me too, for sure. Well, Jim Stoffel says, "This was a beautifully written episode, full of emotional moments and great suspense. I don't know if I can wait for 7 more days for the finale. This is the greatest episode of Trek since What You Leave Behind. This is my favorite Discovery episode of the whole series." Wow, very high praise there. That's excellent. I don't know. I wouldn't agree that's the best since What You Leave Behind. I might actually pick a different Discovery episode for that. But, you know, this was very good. And, you know, I'm really excited to see where it goes from here. So excellent to see such high praise. That's awesome.
Yes. And talking about What You Leave Behind. Oh, there's the DS9 documentary coming out.
Yes.
It's out in theaters next month, and I got my ticket to go see it.
Oh, I'm so jealous. There's nowhere near me.
Nowhere near?
At all. Oh. Nowhere. I was looking online because it said, you know, for Canadian showings, check out Cineplex. So I was like, oh, okay, it is showing in Canada. And I clicked, and of course, there's nothing in my hometown. There's nothing in Edmonton, which is a 5-hour drive away. And then I was like, well, I'll check out Calgary, which is a 9-hour drive away. Nothing. So
those are big cities, relatively speaking.
They are, but unless they're going to add showings, I might have to keep checking, because they do that sometimes.
Well, then I guess I won't tell you that, you know, we had like 6 different theaters to choose from here in Vegas. Oh.
Well, the good news is I did contribute to the campaign, so I will be able to stream it as well when on, I think, April 29th or something like that.
Oh, so. Okay. Well, so you'll see it. Okay.
I will see it. Absolutely. Okay. Very excited for it.
All right. Well, Zainab says, "What an exciting cliffhanger. Pike is so honorable. Georgiou is hilarious. Poe is adorable and a braver head of state than President Bonespurs." "So many hanging strands to weave into the last episode next week. What is Tyler up to? Did Pike appoint Saru as captain? Will Stamets and Culber reconcile? And if Disco makes it into the future, would they be able to score another time crystal from Boreth? The monks would presumably be dead." Oh my goodness. Who did Pike choose to be captain? That's what I want to know. I'm gonna guess Saru. It just seems like such a good fit, and he has exemplified captain characteristics. He has been in command while Pike has been away. Like, it just seems like that's the natural evolution. What do you think?
I agree totally. That was one thing that kind of bugged me in the episode, was that they made that a mystery. I'm like, oh, come on, really? No,
they could have given that. And yeah, then they like cut to black and I was like, oh, really?
Yeah. One thing here, I like the way this is phrased. It sounds like one of those, you know, next time on Star Trek trailers from you know, the 90s or something. "What is Tyler up to? Did Pike appoint Saru as captain? Will Stamets and Culber reconcile? Find out next week on an all new Star Trek Discovery."
Oh, yeah.
But the one point that I like here, and I hadn't thought of it till I saw this comment, "If Disco makes it to the future, would they be able to score another time crystal from Boreth? The monks would presumably be dead." Would they, though? Because they experience time differently. Maybe T'Navik will still be there, having just spoken to Pike or something.
Or maybe he will be a young child in the future. I mean,
could be.
If it's equal, I mean, we talked about this on the main show, how, you know, past, present, and future are all equal, then yeah. Okay.
Definitely.
Maggie Shell writes, I have so many thoughts, but I need to rewatch. Initially geeking out about the exterior Enterprise visuals. I love Star Trek because my dad grew up on TOS and it's his comfort show. My comfort show is TNG because I associate watching it as a child curled up to my dad on the couch, aka worst times of my life. I curl up on the couch with TNG and feel better. He doesn't watch Disco, but I would love to show him these exterior shots of Enterprise and Disco together. So, so good. Those shots would make him grin. Well, Maggie, thank you. And as so many of us know, we love Star Trek, and in part because of the familial connections that we have with it and the relationships. So thank you for sharing your relationship with your father with us. And yes, and I commented, TNG is my comfort show as well. We share that in common. So hi, Maggie.
Oh, that's awesome. I really like this comment. My introduction to Star Trek was my mom bringing home a rental copy of the VHS of Star Trek, the motion picture. And I had never seen anything like it and absolutely loved it. And I've loved watching Star Trek with my mom ever since. So this is really great. And, you know, maybe someday be able to share Star Trek with a potential child of mine in the future. That would be really cool.
Yes.
Well, Karen Chuplis says, I loved the whole mushy, love lettery, Georgiou, Poe, Jet snarking, Pike speeching, Enterprise salivating, family love fest thing. I know there will be complaints about stopping for letters and goodbyes while clocks are ticking, and they're not wrong, but I did not care one jot. That's a great comment. That's almost become a Star Trek tradition at this time, right? You know, it's like, we only have 20 minutes left before the big bad thing happens, but let's stop in the corridor and have a conversation and have a tearful connection moment or something, you know, and then 10 minutes later, do it again. How much time did we have left? I don't know. It doesn't matter. We need to get this emotional scene in, right?
That's right. It's all timey-wimey, right?
Yeah. Time, that's where the real theory of relativity comes in.
Exactly. You know,
time is relative for the needs of the script you're currently shooting, I guess.
Oh, I love that. Yes. Well, Joe Keegan says, I am not just a noser and don't cry so easily, but that had me so close to losing control. The updated interiors of the Enterprise were instantly recognizable. The circular grills in the corridor, the turbo lift handles, the triple screen viewer in the conference room, and then the bridge. It was all just perfection. Anson Mount is the Trekkiest captain we've ever had. He's so strong of character and he looks amazing. The whole huge ensemble cast did an amazing job. I still dislike Stamets. I wish his spores would consume him. He's just rude. Love Anthony Rapp though. So glad next Friday is a holiday and I won't have to wait to watch the season finale. P.S. I love Amy Nelson. Well, Joe, I love you too. Miss you. You just sort of summed up everything. I love your comment. And yes, Anson Mount is amazing and looks amazing as well.
Definitely agree on all of those points. Trekkiest captain. I like that. It should be like a little trophy that gets awarded.
Right?
And the Trekkiest captain goes to Anson Mount as Pike.
Yes, agreed.
Really like that.
Hear, hear.
Well, Daniel comments, Georgiou, by the way, I'm Terran from your mirror universe. Pike, what mirror universe? Wink! OMG, now I'm really getting vibes that this Pike might be the mirror one all along, and that's the reason he doesn't dislike Georgiou as much, as they may have been frenemies or full-blown friends in the mirror universe. Just wow, the emotion that I experienced from all the crew and the fact that the crew stood one final time to give homage to Pike was just so touching. And I bet Brandy Jackala cried at that point as well. I loved that scene. First of all, that cheeky little wink from Pike as he beams away. I thought that was great. I'm not on board with thinking that he's Mirror Pike. I don't think they're going to pull that same one two seasons in a row. And Pike is just too good.
Yeah.
Like, he can't be from the Mirror Universe. He's, like we said, he's the Trekkiest captain, right?
That's right.
Definitely. So, yeah, I don't think so. But I like where your head's at. And I can totally, I can see how that scene could be interpreted that way for sure. But not on my list of possible theories, personally.
Yeah. Liam Smart says, hi, Liam. That was me. Liam Smart says, this episode has all the feels. I like the majority of it, especially the scenes where the crew were talking a letter to their loved ones. I thought that was touching. I do feel, though, that there were some scenes that were a little silly or hard to watch, mainly the Burnham one, because seriously, she's going to be fine. I also really don't care for the Tyler and Burnham love thing. Poe was awesome. The thing that stuck in the saucer of the 1701 reminded me of the Chronoton torpedo stuck in Voyager. I think, again, Georgiou was the best character in this episode. Overall, though, a good episode. Not my favorite, but sets up for a great season finale. Oh, I also loved some of the physics talk in the episode, too. All right, Liam. Well, I did not know of the Chronoton torpedo stuck in Voyager. I must have missed that.
Mm-hmm. That was in a Voyager episode called Before and After.
Okay.
And then it was later, because that was a kind of flash forward scene in Kes's life, they later show that incident in The Year of Hell. So this torpedo gets stuck in Voyager. And
I've seen those episodes.
Yeah. Well, in that episode, it ends up blowing up and causing Tuvok to go blind and has a bunch of stuff going on.
Okay.
Yeah. There's also a Deep Space Nine episode, Starship Down, where there's a torpedo stuck in the mess hall wall. And Quark is there with Akarama, who's played by James Cromwell, who you may know as Zefram Cochrane. And I always like that scene because Quark's trying to disarm it, even though he knows nothing about torpedoes. And if he pulls the wrong one, it could blow up and all this stuff. So, yeah, Star Trek does good with those, you know, tense scenes with a torpedo stuck in a wall.
Yeah. So good callbacks. I like it.
Also, interesting that you bring up Tyler and Burnham. I've been hearing that from a lot of people, actually, that they're not really digging the Tyler Burnham relationship. My mom is currently watching Discovery, and she's not as far along in the season. She's earlier in the season, but she mentioned something that she doesn't really like, that, you know, Burnham-Tyler relationship, and she hopes it doesn't progress. And I kind of had to bite my tongue and say, okay, I hope not, I don't know. But yeah, I'm hearing that from a lot of people. I don't know. What are your thoughts on Tyler and Burnham?
Yeah, I'm not a fan. I wanted Volk and Laurel to get together and rule the universe, or, you know, the Klingon Empire at least, you know, because he came out as son of none and that albino, and to, you know, for his story to start from nothing and then to be with Laurel and over the Klingon Empire, I thought would make a great story. You know, so I'm a little disappointed that we got closure on that relationship. And yeah, I don't know what it is. I'm not sure if I just want Michael to not be involved with anyone or if it's specifically with Tyler. I haven't quite figured that out, but I know I don't really care for them. I mean, I like that they're good friends, but I don't want to see anything more.
Yeah, I'm not too sure how I feel. It seems like they're going to be separated now by a great deal of time and distance. Possibly forever, possibly not. We know how these things go. You know, who knows how it's going to end up. But, you know, I don't know. I'm reserving judgment on that.
And it seems like Star Trek does best when everyone's single. And now it doesn't even look like Stamets and Kolber are going to get to be a couple, you know?
Yeah,
and
that's really sad.
It is. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I don't know what to think about that, too, because I was kind of the Kolber and Stamets thing. I was almost in denial about it because, you know, clearly Kolber wanted to say something else, but Stamets walked away, and I'm like, nope, that didn't just happen.
It didn't, because they're going to get back together. Yep, that's what I was saying when I was like, no, just stay and talk, and Culber, open your mouth and say what you want to say.
Oh, that makes me sad. Yeah. Well, anyway. Tyler Orenchuk says, great episode. My favorite part was when Captain Pike was leaving after his speech, just seeing Michael Burnham's smile. I think her smile meant that the crew were all so grateful and happy to have a kind, brave, selfless, etc. captain, especially after Lorca, and they loved him beyond words. One more episode. Yeah, I agree completely. I think Pike was exactly the captain they needed after the crew was, I'll be quite frank, after the crew was abused by Lorca, you know, and he left them, you know, broken because, yeah, he treated them horribly. He treated them like tools and then discarded them when he no longer needed them and betrayed them all. So Pike just being the quintessential Starfleet captain, embodying all of those great Federation ethics that we've come to love over the years, was just what they needed. And I'm so sad to see him go. But
I know. And, you know, seeing that scene, as we talked about, like it, and then you, Tyler, bring up Lorca, it reminded me of when we first saw Pike. And he just picked up that crew, embraced them, and was like, I am not Lorca. I will have your back. I will not leave anyone behind. Like, you know, just think back to the first of the season and how amazing how amazing Pike was to the crew. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what they needed. And so, yes, Tyler, absolutely agree with your comment there. Well, Caspelita Thompson says, wow, one that I'll look especially forward to seeing again when I rewatch season 2. Lots of moving moments, and I know they were choreographed that way, but I don't mind having my heartstrings pulled now and then. Lots of great character moments, too. Great to see Jet Reno working with Stamets and Tilly. Of course, it was wonderful to see the Enterprise, but my favorite moment was probably the quiet conversation between Paul and Hugh. Very well done, and I'm sure many of us know just how they felt. Yes, Caspelita, I definitely, yeah, that scene between Paul and Hugh, and they just, you knew that they wanted to say something, but they couldn't quite get the words out and convey the feelings that they truly had. It was difficult to watch, and yeah, you could definitely put yourself in those shoes and feel what they were feeling, because it was so well acted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree. So many great little character moments, that Paul and Hugh scene, we've talked about it. Yeah. It's just really moving, really heartbreaking. And, I like seeing more Jet Reno working with the crew, with Stamets and Tilly on the time crystal and all of that. I thought that was really great too.
Okay. So question. So Jet Reno did something, was it her that did something to the crystal?
Yeah, she opened up the cage slightly for it to take more power, which meant that she was exposed to it.
Oh, and so it'd have to be revealed something similar to Pike. Is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so. But she kind of saw the same thing that Burnham saw with the torpedo in the hull and all that stuff. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, I didn't know why it was the same scene, because I sort of thought that the time crystal would be for each individual. So, I don't know. Interesting.
Yeah. Well, it will be a shared experience in the next episode, right. I think. So, it's maybe meaningful to both of them somehow.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, on to our segment I like to call Bits and Pieces. And we have Hucker says, Georgiou is probably the first one in Star Trek to say the actual words Prime Universe and Mirror Universe to make these words even canon. All right. I hadn't even thought about that, but here it is on screen. We can now say Prime Universe and Mirror Universe. Yeah.
Yep. A couple episodes ago was when she said Prime Universe, when she was talking to Burnham's mother. And then in this one, of course, that famous scene with Pike, she calls it the Mirror Universe. Right. So Yeah, it's kind of cool. Yeah. The Prime one kind of didn't really make sense to me, because wouldn't she think that her universe that she came from would be Prime? But that's okay. We'll give it to them. Well, Zainab says, hope number one gets something meaty to do in the last episode. You don't cast the likes of Rebecca Romijn to be eye candy. I'm surprised she wasn't better used over the season. Yeah, that's actually something that, you know, when we got her brief scene a few episodes ago and then haven't seen her since, I was really sad about. So I was really happy to see her in this episode. And like you, man, I hope she's got a big role to play in the next episode or in the upcoming Pike spinoff series. Oop, nope. Maybe, maybe not.
Don't be starting rumors.
No rumors. Just wishful thinking on the part of a lot of people out there. Before anyone out there thinks to send me a link to the petition on my Facebook, I've gotten it from a lot of people. It's fine. Stop. It's okay.
Oh, I didn't know there was a petition. I guess people don't think that my voice matters. Whatever. Well, Frosty Winnipeg says, that was one long cold open. And then Justin says, second longest in Discovery, over 13 minutes. The one for The Wolf Inside was over 14 minutes. So thank you, Justin, for giving us the facts on that. I didn't even notice how long it was. Sometimes I just don't even pick up on these little things, but it's interesting.
That was one that I noticed. I noticed this time around. And it's not even so much that it was just long, but a lot happened. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they rendezvoused with the Enterprise. They extended the things. They evacuated the entire crew. They set the auto-destruct, and then it didn't go off. And that was all before the opening credits. That was crazy. There's so much happened there.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know how I felt about the extending the walkways. Where in the heck did that come from?
I do have to say, when that happened, I turned to Nikki, I was watching with my fiance, and said, okay, that seemed really weird. But then, you know, it kind of reminded me of, you know, when they have to evacuate a jet on the runway and they have all the little slides,
yeah.
Whatever the technical term is, coming out of the exits that they're all evacuating out of. That's what it kind of reminded me of. But it seemed like a really weird way to do things.
Yeah. I don't know. It reminded me of, getting off a cruise ship, and they have extend the planks, but
yeah, I was like, there's gotta be a better way to do that.
Yeah. But
anyway, well, Janessa Ciarda says, okay, a prediction for next week. Since we haven't seen how the Harry Mudd short trek fits in, I'm going to call it and say the final battle will be against a controlled army of robot Muds.
There you have it.
Yep, that's you've heard it here first, folks. They'll all be, saying that if they had any money, they'd be sipping jippers on a beach somewhere and attacking Discovery and Enterprise.
This is now the second week where we've sort of talked about how the Harry Mudd hasn't fit in, but I sort of felt like it did already. What do you think?
How so?
Well, it just felt like because we had Harry Mudd season one, it just seemed like that short trek was a tie-in to season one and not necessarily season two. So I sort of lump it that it's already been checked off my list.
Okay, fair enough. I guess just because the character, I guess that makes sense. As far as the actual events of it, though, do you think we'll see any Harry Mudd robots at any point, or are they just not going to do that?
Well, we do in TOS, and so that's where I feel.
Okay.
What do you think?
I don't know. To me, I think that one was just standalone and just kind of a fun.
Yeah, right. A standalone.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to tie into any specific episodes.
Okay.
Personally, especially since there's only one left.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Justin Ozer says it really is a two-parter. Because earlier on the thread, we were talking about someone's like, oh, it's a two-parter. And I said, well, isn't the whole season a two-parter? But Justin clarifies, as usual, says, it really is a two-parter. Next week's episode is called Such Sweet Sorrow Part 2. And he has a Twitter picture that says, next week's hashtag Star Trek Discovery finale is officially Sweet Such Sweet Sorrow Part 2, making it the first named two-parter of this series. So there you have it, the facts. And interesting, Dan, because I learned the name of the episode from you last week on live, and now I know next week's episode from Justin. So good.
Yeah, I was kind of, I'm, that's one thing I look forward to every week is learning what the name of the next week's episode will be. And, you know, like, oh, that's a cool name. That's a cool title. I'm actually kind of disappointed because we already got this title. Think of something else, but that's okay. That's fine.
No, I want all the episodes at once.
Do you?
Yes, because I podcast and I like to have things all set up before it happens. And so I have been every week adding and editing and, oh my gosh, just give them to me all at once. Or at least like season one where we got the first half and then the second half. Mm-hmm. But this week-to-week business, no, it's been messing with my organizational skills, and yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Regardless of when we get the titles, that would be cool. I did like getting them in chunks like that. I just want each one to have a different name. You know, I like the alliteration, Such Sweet Sorrow. Yes. That's cool. But come on, let's have a different title.
All right. Well, we have quite a segment for you of questions and complaints. Listeners, please bear with us because we do have some definitely complaints, but let's get to our questions first. So Chris Ahern writes, so if Michael was able to communicate with Sarek and Sarek and Amanda were able to get there in time for a tearful goodbye, is there a reason they couldn't have contacted Starfleet? Or maybe even brought along a couple dozen heavily armed Vulcan ships? Well, Chris, this is a very good question, and I ask the same one. Like, yes, and they came in a shuttlecraft, if I remember correctly, seeing them leave in a shuttle. Like, they, and Section 31 has all this advanced technology, and a shuttle got to Discovery before Section 31? I don't know about that.
Yeah. So, yeah, this kind of bugged me as well. Mostly because of they just kind of show up out of nowhere. And it seemed jarring to me and didn't really fit with the episode. When we see them leave the Discovery, they're actually in Sarek's Vulcan cruiser little ship thing.
Right. Oh, and that one does go a little faster than normal, right?
I would assume so. It's quite a bit larger than a shuttle. Yeah. So, I assumed it's a little faster, but still, yeah, that did bug me. That's one thing I've noticed in this season a bit is they kind of play fast and loose with how big space is and how fast we can get places, kind of zipping all over the place in shuttlecraft and all this kind of stuff. So that did bug me a little bit, I do have to say. Regarding a couple dozen heavily armed Vulcan ships, if you'll remember Star Trek Enterprise, when T'Pau took over, it seems like they got very pacifistic after that. So they may not have heavily armed Vulcan ships anymore. But still, yeah, contact Starfleet, get a few other starships in there, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So Cathal, Cathal?
Okay, the T is silent.
Cahill?
Yes.
Okay. Cahill Fitzgerald says, another solid episode. Thought they overdid the numerous long, slow goodbyes given the circumstances, and we know they ain't gonna die. And given they decided to blow up the ship in 20 seconds last week, writers have things to learn, but still producing good Trek. Yeah, that was one thing, because I did enjoy the emotional moments and the long goodbyes and stuff, but at the same time, it's still... This is going to sound like heresy, and I apologize, but it's still only the end of the second season, and we've only had them for, you know, less than 30 episodes. So was it a little unearned, maybe? Like, I didn't feel this heart-wrenching, like, oh my God, these people in this ship, you know, they're leaving their home. I didn't feel that so much because we've had less time with these people and this ship in particular. So, yeah, I like I said, it might be heresy to some people, but I kind of felt that way a little bit.
Well, not the only one, because Billy Wells Logue says, I am so worried that all these goodbyes are going to be meaningless by the time this is over. If Burnham survives or somehow returns to her time in the end, I'm not going to be very happy. All that emotion, all those feelings, they will just be worthless to me. I don't get very emotional over things. I watch. But Discovery definitely got me last night. It started with Sarek and Amanda, and by the time of the kiss between Tyler and Burnham, I was sobbing. Slobbering mess. I'm very nervous about what's going to happen because of the very earned emotions and great story buildup. But I'm more concerned that there's going to be a rushed ending with easy fixes and essentially a reset back to where we were at the beginning of the season, and I demand that there be real consequences to actions. I can't wait for next week. Well, Billy, absolutely, definitely, you've got to be concerned because, yes, they amped up these emotions and we know they're our main crew, so we have to see them again and these goodbyes. And yes, it's just leaving us what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. The only thing I can say is, you know, when Alex Kurtzman and other writers have said that, you know, this finale is going to change everything about Discovery, I'm really holding them to that. Like, I really hope they mean that, because if it is just all business as usual at the start of season three, that will be incredibly disappointing. And I will be right there with you on that one. So it's on the record. If this is all a fake out and they start out setting course at the start of season three, just on another mission for some mystery, yeah, I'll be very disappointed. Janessa Ciarda says, yeah, no. Other than the reimagined Enterprise, this was pretty much 45 minutes of emotionally manipulative filler, a 45-minute extended goodbye that the audience knows isn't a goodbye. The audience is aware that Spock is obviously not going to be stuck in the future. Glad there's one more episode, because if this were the season finale, I'd be so mad. I'm also not feeling that Michael's character arc is over or that series is done with exploring the 23rd century. My prediction is there's going to be a quasi-reset button at the end of this, and the time travel trope offers the mother of opportunities for reset buttons. I cannot disagree with you. Right. Voyager and its reset button frustrated me so many times with their using time travel as a reset. And if that's all this is as well, I, like I said, I'm on the record. I will be mad.
Well, I'm hoping that the writers know and understand and have heard from previous reset buttons why this mm-hmm. doesn't work and why it's lazy writing. And, you know, I get that we want to, you know, go back to how things were. Trust me, I get it. I'm TNG. I know Data has emotions. Now he doesn't, right? I get it. But yeah, Janessa, I agree with you. Yeah, no resets, please.
Yeah, and like I said, the writers have been saying that, you know, something big is coming at the end of the season that's going to change everything. So I really think they're going to stick to that. And if that is all just a fake out, like, I'm going to be mad at them for, you know, they have to hype up what they're doing, of course. But I think, you know, they're not so foolish as to waste that goodwill by outright lying to us. I think something big and fundamental is going to change. So
okay.
I'm holding out hope.
All right. Well, Reese Morgan writes, seeing Pike take command of the Enterprise with its multicolor panels and turbolift twisty stick, my fan senses tingled. But that was sadly cut short by the magic time visions and Michael demanding our full attention, reminding us all that this is her show and we're stuck with her. I don't want to come across as a hater, but I wish someone could explain to me how Michael is in any way likable. I find her very smug and arrogant. I also wish she would stop cheaply telling everyone she loves them. Starfleet is her place of employment, not a therapy session. Half of the runtime of this episode was awkward character crying moments. Sending Discovery to the future made no sense, as someone could have created a time bomb and strapped it to the warp core. The bridge crew all dramatically standing in unison is corny, and this must be the third or fourth time it's happened. Anson Mount is wonderful as Pike, and I really wish his five-year mission was a planned spinoff. All right, Reese. Well, you definitely have some opinions. You know, and I was thinking about this. Did we see the third or fourth times that the bridge crew saying goodbyes? Have we seen? I was trying to figure out, because a couple of people have said we've seen them say goodbye before. And I was like, have we?
There was the one that I can think of, I think three or four times is a bit of an exaggeration, but the one time I do remember is when they thought Saru was going to die and they were taking him off the bridge and they all stood up one by one to kind of honor him as he left. But I think that was really the only other time. I don't know where the three or four times comes in. Mm-hmm. I will say I really appreciated those scenes and I liked them personally, but the scene from Guardians of the Galaxy always pops into my head, where they're all joining the plan and they all stand up one by one and they look at Rocket and he finally stands up and he's like, all right, here we are. We're all standing just like a bunch of a-holes or something like that. And that pops into my head kind of irreverently. But I personally appreciate those scenes. Also, I personally, and it's all just opinions, so I can't say you're wrong or I'm wrong or right or whatever. I think Michael's really likable and I really like her. Mm-hmm. I think she's a great character. So your mileage may vary, I guess.
Yeah, you know, and I get that Starfleet is her place of employment and not a therapy session. However, I think there are certain jobs and even careers where, I mean, I have been at some very difficult schools. And I'll tell you, you have to use your coworkers as sounding boards, as a therapist, like to try and just get through the day with sometimes the actions that kids do. And you're like, I need a moment. And so to go and rely on your co-teacher in my place, or, you know, a coworker, like, it's going to happen, because you just can't hold on to those feelings until your scheduled appointment with your therapist happens. Like, you're going to have and use the sounding boards to those people who you trust. And hopefully you do trust the people that you work with. So, you know, I get what you're saying. However, I have been in, you know, certain schools that I've definitely had to, you know, and I have been sounding boards for people and I have bounced ideas and my feelings towards others. So, interesting comment.
Mm-hmm. And add to that the fact that this isn't just their place of employment. This is their home.
Yeah.
Like, that adds a whole nother level to it,
yeah,
I think.
That's true.
But all that aside, I think Turbo Lift Twisty Stick is the name of my new band. So,
awesome.
Thank you for that. Well, Zach Moore says,
oh dear, I'm sorry, have to read this down. I'm just going to apologize right now.
Whew. Okay, so the all caps parts, I think I'm going to have to yell.
Yes.
all right. Zach Moore says, a boring, momentum-killing episode going into the season finale. This is the second time in four episodes we've had extended sequences of Michael Burnham is leaving and never coming back, with melodramatic, drawn-out goodbyes. Even though, just like last time, we know she'll be just fine. Michael Burnham was the Red Angel after all, as most of us figured it would be. They have to stop with these season-long twists, or at least don't make them as obvious as this or Voke/Tyler. Did I miss when the Enterprise was repaired? I thought the idea was as soon as it was, Pike would return to it. And it's smaller than Discovery now? Also, why is Spock still not in uniform? Pike changed back into his Enterprise One. If Spock's not going to shave, he could at least put on his own uniform. For what's supposed to be a serialized show, there has been a lot of filler this season, which is frustrating and confusing. Now they have only one episode left to wrap everything up, and no doubt it'll feel extremely rushed. Why is Michael's mom making instructional videos about how to use the Red Angel suit? They made a big deal out of the fact only Michael or her mom could use the suit. She even tells Georgiou that it won't work for just anyone. Then in the log in this episode, she's like, whoever you are watching this, dot, dot, dot. All right.
Oh, well. Zach.
I mean, I could talk about all these points one by one, but I'm just going to say that I think you're frustrated with the general direction of the season and how this episode has gone. And I get that. I totally understand that. Some of the stuff that you talk about doesn't bother me. I think Spock's still technically on a leave of absence, you could say, so he's not in uniform yet. I felt like the instructional bit from the video was kind of her mom having a bit of fun with her camera. I mean, she's kind of by herself for who knows how long. She's talking to these drone things. I don't think it was actually meant to be an instructional video, but Burnham was able to use it as such. Yeah, I don't know. A lot of these things just really didn't bug me, but fair enough if it's not working for you.
Well, I had Zach on last week on postcards, and we did talk about, because it was bugging me that Spock isn't in his uniform, and I totally get it. And there was some people commenting, and it's like, well, Spock is in away missions. He's been with Burnham, right, to the control ship. He's sitting in the conference room. He's there. He's at work. Mm-hmm. Why is he not in uniform? So, Zach, I totally get you there on that.
Yeah, and I actually don't disagree. I think the real reason he's not in uniform is they're going to have a big reveal in the final episode that when he's clean shaven and has a haircut and he's in his blue uniform, I think. So,
you know, waiting. That's, okay.
Yeah, that's the real reason. And is it contrived that he's not in his uniform? Yeah, but whatever. It just doesn't bother me.
Well, Dan, how do you think that the fans responded to this week's episode?
Bit of a mixed bag. I think there were, like how I responded to it, there were a lot of things they really liked about it and some things that kind of didn't really work all that well. You know, and a lot of things that worked really well for some people, but really turned a lot of people off too. So I think overall pretty good. But there's definitely some issues, and I don't think that they're wrong.
Right. Yes. Well, be sure to check out the Discovery coverage here on the network. We have Live from the Edge, airs on Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern, so you can watch Bruce and Brandy and ask questions live, and it will be released as a podcast on Saturday mornings. Our commentary will be available as Tracks from the Edge with Mike and Max. And of course, you can catch full analysis on the Edge Main Show with Patrick and a guest this week. To wrap up the coverage, join us for Notes from the Edge for links between Discovery and the broader franchise with Chris Jones. You'll find all of these in the main feed for the Edge and in the Trek.fm master feed. We'd love to hear your thoughts on Discovery, and the best place to do that is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook, where I will collect your feedback for postcards from the Edge. You can also find us on Twitter at Trek.fm or send us email using the contact form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select the Edge. So Dan, where can people find you here on the network and elsewhere?
Well, on the network, I co-host Literary Treks, the Trek FM books and comics show for Star Trek books and comics. And I host that with Bruce Gibson of Live from the Edge and other stuff as well. So check that out.
And
if you,
it's been a while since I've been on Literary Treks, and I've got the summer coming up. I probably could read a book. And yes, I just invited myself onto their show.
I had a feeling you might bring that up because I was kind of looking at the schedule and thinking we need to fill some spots. So
okay,
you might have to keep me in mind. That. Maybe when we're off the air here, I'll ask you a few questions. Okay. But other than that, I also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/Kurtratz Productions where I talk about Star Trek, of course, and right now mostly Star Trek Discovery, especially as we're heading into these final couple of episodes. But after that, we've got the Picard show and Short Treks and all that good stuff as well. You can also find me on Twitter. I'm at Kurtratz, that's K-E-R-T-E-R-A-T-S, and you can find me in the Babel Conference.
Well, you can find me here on the network where I co-host The Edge main show with Patrick Devlin. I also co-host Earl Grey with Richard Marquez and Justin Ozer. And that's about my favorite Next Generation. You can also find me over on the Fandom Podcast Network where I co-host Discoville. And that's where we discuss the Orville and Discovery with my good friends, Haley Stoddart, Kyle Wagner, and Kevin Reitzel. You can find me on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson, but really, my favorite place is on the Babel Conference. That's really the group I'm in. I love it. So if you'd like to help us keep all of our shows going and even become an associate producer, visit patreon.com/trekfm for all the details. I'd like to thank our current associate producers. They are Norman Lau, Tony Robinson, Thomas Puleo, Lisa Slack, Shoab Mirza, Richard Rutledge, James Muldrow, Cornelia Reutner, Ryan Mallett, Chris Trebuzio, and Brian Malosh. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and especially The Edge. I think I can say that list without reading it. It's
That's amazing. I'm impressed.
Well, Dan, thank you so much for coming on Postcards. Such a pleasure and honor to have you.
Well, thanks so much for having me on the show. I'm really glad I was able to get in before the end of the season. So, yay!
Well, join us next week for another episode of Postcards from the Edge. Season finale!
Oh my gosh!
Hailing frequencies are open.